When it comes to space, we don't have many standards that are effective. There are a couple around, and there's a bit of an understanding of the general security posture for space systems, but especially with all of the new applications we're seeing come out and all these new technologies, we don't have a very good understanding of how to actually secure it.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Dr. Jordan Potnick, who is a critical infrastructure lead partner from Ankrum Consulting and is also a senior space cyber researcher from the University of South Australia. And today we're discussing space and the resiliency around space. So Jordan, thank you for joining the show and welcome.
Thanks very much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So firstly, I want to congratulate you on completing your PhD. I mean, it's a big achievement. And I know that when we spoke last year, I think we said before the show it was like 8 months. I think it could be longer than that. You were still completing it. So when we spoke, you said, as soon as I complete it, I'd love to, you know, do an interview. So congratulations again. I mean, it's quite a large achievement. And I'm really excited to get into this topic today.
Thank you. Yeah, that was quite a mammoth workload, but I'm happy that it's done. And I think that the findings that came out of it were very valuable. So I'm happy to share that.
Let's get into space. I've never covered this topic before, and I'm probably recorded at the time of this recording about 200 interviews now. So I'm very excited. But maybe let's paint the picture, because I think space is one of those things that people often forget about. And it's not something that I often see at conferences or people touch on it on the show. So maybe as an industry, we're just very consumed by what's happening on planet Earth. But in fact, space is super important. I mean, based on our discussion that we had, when you were like rattling off all the stuff and I was like, wow, I never even thought about it that way. So I was really intrigued by that. So maybe... Yeah, tell me everything.
Yeah, you know, honestly, when I first started getting into this research, and mind you, I had experience with space before this, but I didn't realize just how critical the systems are up there for life here on Earth. So I can definitely empathize with that kind of shock. But yeah, the reality is that almost everything we do here on Earth does rely on space infrastructure in one way or another. Our banking to our internet and, you know, the electricity grid also relies on these things. And a lot of our critical infrastructure actually relies on it. You've got emergency management. Like there's just all sorts of different things that happen here on Earth that you wouldn't necessarily imagine that, you know, if something in space was affected, it would also affect these critical services that we have here.
Yeah. Okay. So you said like banking, electricity, internet. So for people listening, perhaps, or just, I don't know, an everyday person, why do you think people just forget about it? Now, I ask this question because you've got Elon Musk and friends coming out here saying, I'm going to go to Mars and I'm doing all these things. But it seems to me when you put it in from your point of view, it's critical, but yet it's like everyone forgets about it. Or do you think it's more so out of sight, out of mind, like, you know, we can't see into space from here on Earth. So do you think it's more so we just can't see it, therefore we forget about it?
I think it's probably, you know, both of those kinds of things. So, you know, space is an exciting domain. And often when we hear about space, we're hearing about, you know, discovery of new planets, meteors that you just narrowly miss Earth, or, you know, Elon Musk trying to get to Mars. Like these are the sorts of things that we think about, the lunar rover. And all of this stuff is very exciting, but, you know, understandably, not much of that is seen as critical. And in fact, those are the elements that we get most visibility of aren't necessarily the most critical things that we're dealing with. They're just potentially the most exciting. So that's where the second part comes in, where, you know, out of sight, out of mind. That's very true. I think, you know, something like the electricity or the electric grid is very tangible. You know, people may not think of the grid itself, but you will definitely know if power goes out. That's something that you feel immediately, and you know exactly that it's your power that went out. Or your water went out. When it's something in space, it's a lot less tangible, and especially for people who aren't in the sector. Maybe your power goes out, but you'd be thinking it's because the grid went down, not because a satellite was hacked. And so, yeah, out of sight, out of mind, I think plays a big part of it. I think the other thing is it's often just, up till now especially, it hasn't been talked about that much. I think, you know, we've been using space, we've been relying on space for a while now, you know, since Sputnik sort of kicked it off at the start over 60 years ago. But the way in which it's integrated in our life has been a little bit more, I'd say, subtle. It's not like, you know, one day we didn't have electricity and then we did. With space, it's been a bit more of a slow growing movement until we've got to this point of it being absolutely critical to our society.
Wow, yeah, great points. So I'm curious now to know, what excites you about space? I mean, you did a whole thesis on it, so clearly you're really invested in it. So I'm just curious to know, like, what is it specifically that just gets you out of bed in the morning?
I originally started a PhD actually in electric grid security because, to me, I was trying to think of what's the biggest, most important challenge. If someone hacks something and it goes down, what's going to cause the most chaos here on Earth? And the first thing that came to my mind was the electric grid. And so that's what I started researching. And kind of a funny story, but this was around when COVID hit, and I was actually in Mexico at the time on holiday, and everything got shut down, and then I was stuck there for a while. And so I lost, you know, I wasn't eligible for my usual PhD sponsorship from Australia at that point. And so I was looking for other funding. And then that's when the space topic was presented to me. This is also around the same time that Donald Trump launched the Space Force in the US. And so there was a bit more investment going into space research. And so I sort of jumped on that opportunity. And only when I started really digging into it did I realize actually this is the most important thing that I could have been researching, because, you know, like the electric grid, that is critical. But that also relies on space systems. So if space systems go down, you could also have the electric grid go down along with various other critical infrastructures. So that's what has become my passion. I'm passionate about critical infrastructure in general. That's been my background. And that is what gets me out of bed in the morning, because a lot of cybersecurity is focused on the IT, which generally comes down to data, which generally comes down to money in one way or another, whether it's a lawsuit or you're losing intellectual property. It's all very money oriented. But when it, with critical infrastructure, if critical infrastructure goes down, your society starts to collapse pretty quickly. If you lose power, if you lose hospitals, if you lose transport, if you lose networking and communications, you know, it doesn't take long until society starts to crumble. And we witnessed some aspects of that during COVID, just looking at the food supply chain. And, you know, Australia's hit especially bad with people kind of buying out some critical products. And it became evident very early on that this is critical and society just doesn't function without these kinds of services. You've got all of these bad guys out there, for lack of a better word, who are trying to affect these things, who are trying to degrade societies, who are trying to influence governments. And the way you can do that is through attacking critical infrastructure. And then for me, the ultimate challenge within the critical infrastructure area is space technology, because it affects almost all of it. It takes almost all of the most challenging aspects of securing critical infrastructure and puts it into a single technology. And also, you know, it is just pretty cool to think about. So I do enjoy that.
So basically you're in Mexico drinking margaritas and researching space.
Yeah, that was the benefit of being stuck there, was the $1 bottles of tequila. So I can't complain too much.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Okay, a couple of things. What you're talking about is amazing. So I just want to get into this a little bit more. Before, if we go back just a step, we said out of sight, out of mind. So how do we get space in sight and in mind? Now, forgetting about Elon Musk and friends and the lunar eclipses and all of that, what about the critical infrastructure side of things? Because what you're explaining is, if these things go down, so does our society. And maybe it's something that we're not really paying much attention to. So I'm curious from your point of view, because you have this obsession with space and you have done a thesis and you've researched heavily, how do we get critical infrastructure in space a bit more front and center out there?
So Australia's been doing a lot of work actually in this area, and maybe not to raise the awareness of how critical it is, but raising the awareness of space technology in general is always a good thing in my mind. And one of the reasons why the Australian Space Agency was set up is that they were able to actually encourage, you know, a nationwide discussion and create this vision for something beyond what we have here, and the sense of unity, which is very important, especially during times of conflict and kind of political deterioration that we're seeing worldwide. It's important to have a sense of feeling of, you know, being a one nation and having this vision for something bigger than us. And so I think the general awareness of space is increasing, which is great. And I think that's the first step, because if there's no point talking about the security of space if no one is aware of what space is and you know, how we use it for life here on Earth. But I think the other part is, at least for me, is coming onto, you know, podcasts with you, like here, publishing papers like I do and talking at events. And just generally spreading the news, because the reaction I get in general when I talk about this is, one, wow, that's crazy, I've never thought about that. And then the second one, is it really that important? This stuff you're describing to me sounds kind of like Star Wars. Like, you know, is that real? Or you know, or is this sort of, is it a theoretical possibility? And to that question, I always say, well, it is very real. You know, it does sound futuristic. A lot of the stuff we talk about in this area sounds futuristic, but the reality is to date, we've had well over 100 cyber attacks alone against space infrastructure. And I say alone because there are various other ways you can affect space infrastructure. It's not just through cyber. You've got physical weapons like anti-satellite tests, which we've seen a number of times in the last few years, and that causes all sorts of problems with space debris and other issues. The International Space Station actually had to divert out of the way of a space debris field, and on every rotation around Earth has to divert based on a cloud of debris created by a Russian anti-satellite test the other year. And then you've also got electromagnetic threats. So things such as electromagnetic pulse weapons or, you know, jamming that we see. There's also lasers which can be used to affect satellites. So there are a lot of different ways to impact them. And I think, you know, it's quite a big discussion to be had, but it starts with that awareness of actually talking about these things, talking about how important space systems are and how vulnerable they are and how many attacks there are out there against them, and making people realize that this is a reality now and it does have an impact on our way of life.
Yeah, look, you make so much sense. Because, I mean, I'm thinking back to when did I hear more about space? I think when I was a kid at school and they'd teach you this thing in science. And then I remember my dad bought me a space book and with the 3D glasses. So then, you know, Saturn and all that would look 3D, which was pretty cool growing up in the 90s. That was it. And then, yeah, of course you hear Elon Musk and friends doing their thing. But then that's all that's really you ever hear from. I mean, look, even, okay, before Elon Musk doing SpaceX, and yes, you had NASA, but even that was still like rare to really hear anything even on like mainstream media or anything. Have you sort of thought the same? I mean, obviously it's different now because you're in this space and you're researching this space, but would you say this is sort of the same sentiments from other people that you're speaking to? Like as soon as you finish school, like you don't really hear much about it.
Yeah, well, no, it's true. It's very true. And that was true for me too. I think it's the only reason why I wasn't obsessed with this earlier is that I wasn't aware of it really. I wasn't aware of one that you could even get into this. You know, when you think of this, you just think NASA, you don't really think Australia does much in this area, but that's changing very quickly. And honestly, one of the things that when I first was offered this, you know, to start researching this, I actually said no. Because the things that I dealt with space infrastructure in the past, it was honestly very boring. You know, it was just communications. Like I'm a telecoms engineer, so that's my specialty, but it didn't seem anything special. But when you really start digging into it, you realize that, you know, that there's a lot of really fancy things in there that are quite interesting. And, you know, before this research, I think the thing that started piquing my interest was I started dating my partner, Sabrina, who is actually really into sci-fi. And I don't consume much TV or media, so I hadn't seen many, many things in the past. And so she sort of introduced me to this world. And a lot of that is focused on space. And, you know, just sort of made me start to think as well and made me start to get interested in it. And, you know, that's obviously very futuristic and not exactly representative of reality, but it is an exciting thought to start to think about. And then when you realize that it's actually a field that you can get into, that's when I started really getting interested.
You said there's a couple of fancy things in there. What are the fancy things?
When you're looking at it from an engineering perspective, it can just seem like, okay, we've got this link here. So now we can communicate from this part of the world to the other part of the world. When you start delving into it, you start thinking about things like quantum communications. You look at like artificial intelligence, which is used in various different ways now and is starting to, like, there are a lot of interesting use cases coming out around it. There's onboard processing, which, you know, traditionally satellites have been built for a very specific purpose, and a lot of it would be built into, you know, kind of hardwired in the electronics and the way that it works to get it as efficient as possible and therefore as lightweight and using as little energy as possible. These days, with advances in solar power technology, we're able to get more power to the systems and we're able to do a lot more on board. So within the satellite, you can actually have advanced onboard processing, which allows you to essentially have a little computer on there where you can do all sorts of different types of things that we haven't been able to do in the past. Just yesterday, there was a satellite that was launched, actually, which it's called Moonlighter. It was launched by the US and it was launched for the purposes of security testing. So they're planning to do some cybersecurity tests on there. They're planning to have a competition to see who can hack it. And to be able to do that, they've got an onboard computer, which you're able to do all sorts of things like put malware in there, for example. In the past, this has been very challenging because the resources have been limited to be able to do these kinds of things. So yeah, when I say fancy, I mean, these things that are in space used to be just single purpose. And now we're coming up with all sorts of really crazy applications and as we're heading to Mars and building lunar infrastructure and space hotels and space tourism, it's just going to get a lot more interesting. There'll be a lot more technologies brought in, a lot more vulnerabilities to look at and try to protect, and just a lot more cool things in general coming out of this area.
I love all that. And you're right. It's wild. I want to, though, focus on our economy, how heavily reliant that we are on space satellites, which you've clearly touched on quite heavily here today. And you made a point before, Jordan, around, you know, how fast would society crumble? So just say hypothetically a whole satellite goes down for whatever reason, it was hacked, shot down, whatever. How fast do you think our society would start to crumble if that happened? And then if they started to go down one by one, I don't know, like, have any sort of barometer, but you do. So I'm curious to know.
Yeah. So there are actually a few things to consider here. So one, you need to consider what type of satellite it is. You've got, I don't want to get too technical here, but LEO, MEO, GEO, which means low Earth orbit. And then you've got geostationary orbit, Earth orbit. And then they're sort of your two ends. So your low Earth orbit is really close to Earth. They're generally smaller satellites. They're worth less. They're a little bit easier to manufacture and put up there. And they're often less critical. The GEO, on the other hand, is quite far away from Earth. These satellites cost a fortune. They're very big, very complex, and there are way less of them. So if those kinds of satellites are attacked, then you're looking at much bigger impact. The other thing to consider here is that generally when we're talking about satellites, you're often talking about constellations of satellites, because a single satellite by itself, you know, this is rapidly changing. So I don't want to say that, you know, it's not worth anything, because that's not true anymore. Like, a single satellite being hacked could be bad at the constellation level. So say, for example, a ground station is hacked, and a ground station is the receiving point here on Earth, which is able to communicate with a number of satellites in orbit. If you hack that, you could take down, you know, affect a large number of satellites. And then depending on what those satellites are offering, the impacts you could see to Earth are varied. So I think the easiest way to start this conversation is for me to explain what kinds of critical services we're talking about. If a satellite is taken down, or a satellite constellation is taken down, you could be talking about communication satellites, which are used for, you know, all over the world, especially in remote or hard to reach areas. It's used for things like emergency services, transportation, energy production and distribution, mining infrastructure. So you could lose communications. And so if that goes down, then, you know, potentially your mining operations stop, your emergency services aren't able to respond, you'll lose communication, which is very important at critical times. So with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, just before they actually launched the ground invasion, they attacked the satellite infrastructure to disrupt communications. And they did something similar when they entered Georgia. It wasn't necessarily satellites, but they affected the communication systems in Georgia a number of years back when they did a land invasion there. And that means that suddenly your military and emergency services aren't able to coordinate effectively. So that can have catastrophic impacts in itself. Another critical service that we talk about if we're looking at satellites being taken down are position, navigation, and timing. So things like your GPS. If that gets taken down, then your aircraft are grounded. Your maritime infrastructure, like, you know, ships, their navigation systems are affected, and the ability to actually distribute goods in your supply chain will be impacted. This includes logistics, like road logistics as well, emergency response, power grid synchronization. So you've got power grid and various other critical infrastructures which rely on these systems for precision timing. And that precision timing is absolutely critical, especially for something like a power grid, because it's used to synchronize electricity. And if that goes out of sync, then you could be talking, you know, some severe impacts, even potentially explosion type impacts. So, you know, that has its own effect as well. We've also got weather forecasting and disaster management, which could impact the way, like, you know, if it was attacked at the right time and we're dealing with something like a hurricane coming down, then that could be catastrophic as well. And then the surveillance. So for things like humanitarian aid, if you've got like a humanitarian corridor, which is a way to evacuate civilians from a war zone, often you use satellites not only to communicate, but also to plan those routes and monitor them to make sure that they're not being attacked. So again, there's a time critical element there. And then finally, you've got remote sensing, which tells you about Earth's surface. So immediately, if you affect remote sensing, you may not have immediate effects except to say mining. But over time, if it's modified, if the data is modified, or if it's changed, or if it's, you know, disrupted for a long period of time, then you start affecting things like pipelines, transmission lines, dams and bridges, as well as being able to remotely identify hazards and assess infrastructure health. So I think the question is probably, more complex than it sounds, because there are so many things that could be affected, and it depends on the exact type of attack. But if any of these functions go down, you know, you can imagine how impactful that's going to be felt here on the ground.
So basically everything crumbles from that long list of things that you rattled off. I mean, of course it depends, but I mean, it was good to get a bit of depth and breadth of everything that's impacted. It's not just emergency services. It's all the other things that you suggested, as well as, sorry, that you made a list of. But then also that has a flow-on effect. So then people start dying, people start panicking, people start losing it. I mean, look, if we go back to even the COVID thing, like satellites were working and people lost it. Imagine if they weren't. Imagine if you couldn't call someone. People would lose their mind. And how would you even know? Because you can't even call anyone. And then you've got to think about power, you know, explosions and there's fires, but then you can't call anyone to get anyone there to put the fire out. Like, it would just be a disaster.
It could be a complete disaster. And like you said, there's the rippling effects. So if one of these things are taken out, even mining infrastructure, that's taken out for long enough, and a whole bunch of things are impacted after that. Again, it really comes down to this timing aspect. If you've just had an emergency, like say there's been a massive flood or fire, and your land communications are down, you're immediately relying on satellite communication. So if that's impacted in that time, then at the worst moment when everything is chaotic already, you can't even communicate, you can't signal for help, you can't coordinate, and it has that amplification effect, which is an area that I also look at within the security realm. You've got the literal security of these systems, but then also how does it impact the security of our society if they're affected at the most inopportune times from our perspective, or the most opportune times from the attacker's perspective?
So just to go back to the satellite type, so you've got the LEO, which is the lower Earth orbit, and then you've got the GEO. What does the G stand for again? Sorry, Jordan.
Geostationary.
Gotcha. And then was there a MEO, I think I heard as well?
Yes, that's medium Earth orbit.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes a lot of sense then. And I guess, as you alluded to before, like the LEO, so the closer to Earth, still important, but they're not, like, if that got wiped out, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but depends on if there was all of them got wiped out, it'd be different. But it's more probably the impact would be on those GEO ones. Is that right?
Yeah, I think the GEO ones, they're the most expensive and can be the most critical. But these days, when we talk, we can't forget about LEO, because most innovation that's happening now is in LEO. So almost all of the new applications that we're seeing, almost all of them are happening in low Earth orbit. And so very quickly, our low Earth orbit, the satellites in that orbit are becoming more critical. And soon enough, those two will be things that we'll need to rely on if we're not already. You know, I would probably be remiss to say that there are already LEO applications which are already being used in critical areas. So yeah, I think because it's the most accessible, it's the cheapest to get to, it's the cheapest to deploy there and operate. And so that's where a lot of the commercial innovation is sitting. And so very quickly, we're starting to see some very interesting applications happen there, which will become critical to us.
So in some of your literature that you sent over prior to the interview, I was reading through it, and then you've defined this definition in one of your write-ups around space system security. So would you be able to maybe provide your version of that definition?
The reason why I had to go so far in my thesis to define space system security is because there's an understanding of space security that has existed for some time. And space security traditionally has been a political area kind of field for study and also to actually implement measures and policies. So really when it comes to space security, there's three different areas within that. We're talking about security from space is the first kind of area. So this is protecting Earth from asteroids and also aliens and other things that whatever comes our way. The second element is space force security. So using, say, for example, military satellites or Earth observation satellites that we use for security here on Earth, such as monitoring the nuclear weapon development in North Korea or things like that. And then finally which is the area that I've really focused on, is security in space. So this is applying security to our space systems. And a big piece of that puzzle is cybersecurity. And when we're talking about security in space, or what I call space system security, then where the real definition here is the assurance of the services, the control, and the confidentiality of a space system. So the services are those things that I talked about, the things that we actually depend on, your communications, your position, navigation, and timing, your remote monitoring of Earth. And then you've got your control, which is maintaining control over the satellite itself. You don't want a hacker to come in and take control over your satellite or any other space system for that matter. That could be the end of the mission. And then finally, the confidentiality, which is important in certain applications. Obviously, the military side relies on confidentiality, but then there are other elements as well where confidentiality needs to be considered.
Would you say we have assurance around space system security at the moment?
I would say no. I mean, it's a broad question, but in general, I would say no.
Does that worry you?
Yeah, definitely. There are reasons why that's the case. Like, you know, I'm definitely worried. Like, space is very critical. And like I've said, if you don't have security there, which for the most part, can't say our security is spectacular, then, you know, all of these services here on Earth will be affected. But I take courage in the fact that we are starting to make some movements in this space. I think there's a lot of interest in the area. I think some of the more critical government kind of driven applications do have that security lens. But when now this second space race, or new space as it's called, it's been a private enterprise thing. So suddenly companies are coming to play. And, you know, whenever we're talking commercial reality, we need to get product to market as soon as possible. And as you've probably discussed with many other people, security often drops to the bottom of that list. If you're trying to get a product out quickly and you've got a lot of competition and we're in a race, a global race, you just want to get something out as soon as possible. And often security is left out of that equation because it's expensive, it's slow, it's a bit annoying. We don't necessarily know how to do it properly anyway. And so then it just gets left out, which means that we're left to be more vulnerable. So there's elements there which are secure, but I think in general, we're not really doing that much beyond encryption. And even with encryption, that's not a guaranteed.
So you're telling me, Jordan, that us as a society on Earth are relying off people's goodwill and a bit of a band-aid solution at the moment?
I mean, it can feel that way. It can feel that way, especially in my shoes when I deal with this every day. I think it's a little bit better than that. The reality is, to be able to get to an actual space system in space, there's a lot of things that have to be, that, like, there are a lot of other things that you can put barriers in place before you get to the space vehicle. And the space vehicle isn't necessarily the most critical component, depending on the size of your constellation. You've also got the ground station, you've got the communications link itself, you've got the people involved, and you've got the supply chain, which is extensive. But the reality is, the ground station is what communicates with the satellite. So in general, if you want to communicate with a satellite, you need to compromise the ground station. So right now, I'd say that the ground station itself uses a lot more traditional cybersecurity measures, which means it's a bit easier to protect. And I'm not saying it's easy, but it's easier because we've got a lot more understanding of how to protect IT systems and how to protect, you know, networks here on ground. But then there's the operational technology element, which is often left out. And this is critical infrastructure wide. When people are investing in their security strategy, they often invest in the security of the IT business systems. And then, you know, maybe 90% of the security budget goes there. And then the other 10%, if we're lucky, is for the OT environment, the operational technology environment. And so that's your weak link. But that is the link. So I'd say right now, that's where a lot of the security is, in the ground station. But there have been examples where that's been compromised. And then once you've got communications to the satellite, there are very few satellites out there that have any built-in measures to protect themselves. So that's when it starts becoming pretty dangerous.
So from my understanding, Jordan, space satellites are classified as critical infrastructure, which means that they fall under the Security of Critical Infrastructure Act. Most people know it as the SOCI Act. So you mentioned that it's quite loose with the requirements around satellites. So maybe give me a little bit of a lay of the land on this front.
Yeah, sure. So I think SOCI is a very important step to securing Australian critical infrastructure. And I think it was a really good move by the government. It does with the SOCI update, it does include space technology now as a critical infrastructure, which is fantastic. The SOCI requirements itself are one thing, and I think most people in the security industry would agree that the actual requirements of the SOCI Act are pretty basic. The reality is that, you know, that although they're basic, most of the critical infrastructure industries don't have it in place, so it has been a big wake-up call. But in general, it focuses on a risk management program, which every company should really have one anyway. The ability to notify of cybersecurity incidents that have affected anything critical, which again shouldn't be such a big ask. And then a few other things which are more about allowing the government to respond to things, so that the Department of Home Affairs have got additional powers to be able to compel owners and operators of critical infrastructure to act in relation to incidents. But when it comes to space, one of the things for SOCI were to allow sector-specific standards. So there's no The reason why SOCI is quite broad is that every critical infrastructure sector is very unique and has its own security challenges and considerations. And so SOCI allows room for each sector to implement their own security standards. When it comes to space, we don't have many standards that are effective. There are a couple around, and there's a bit of an understanding of the general security posture for space systems. But especially with all of the new applications we're seeing come out and all these new technologies, we don't have a very good understanding of how to actually secure it. So there aren't sector-specific standards for space systems here in Australia. And even when you refer to the international standards that exist, they're quite general. And then on top of that, because space relies on such extensive supply chains, often a lot of space companies don't actually fall under the SOCI Act, because the SOCI Act defines space technology, critical space technology, as the actual position, navigation and timing application, space domain awareness, weather monitoring and forecasting, communications, remote sensing and facilitating access to space. So something like a launch pad. And that's great, but those are services. And most companies that exist in the space sector here in Australia are some sort of supplier to that. So they may make a component, they may make a piece of software. They're not actually delivering these services themselves. So they don't fall under the SOCI Act, which means that they're not liable to implement these measures.
Wow. Okay. So do you think that we are going to get a standard that way we can protect satellites that are out there? Or, I mean, is it being worked on? Or do you have any insight on that front?
There is a lot of work going on internationally. Within Australia, there's limited effort going into this, but I'm not sure if we do need an Australian-specific standard. We just really need a standard that is recognized by Australia and by Australian legislative authorities. But there is some work. So I'm actually involved in one at the moment with IEEE to develop a new international standard for space systems. The timeline on that is a couple of years. So, you know, it takes some time for us to figure out what's going on. But the big challenge with this, but especially when it comes to space, is that a standard needs to be general enough that it applies to the whole sector, but it needs to be specific enough that it actually enhances your security when you implement the measures. That's a very tough balance to achieve. And when it comes to space technology, it's so varied. There's so many different things going on. There's so much innovation. It's moving so quickly. By the time we even develop that standard, you know, if we're able to achieve the right balance even in the first place, then when we release it, how it gets implemented is a whole other story, because all of the individual aspects at play can make it quite challenging to follow a security standard to begin with.
So how are you managing that challenge? Because, I mean, you raise a great point, like general enough so it encompasses everything, but specific enough so it actually does security correctly. So how are you going about managing that?
My personal approach, I think I've seen a lot of different approaches out there, and, you know, some of them are, as you see all over the security world, some of them are kind of vendor driven, where, you know, someone's selling something specifically and they'll say, buy this thing from us and you'll be resilient. And so I see that a lot, but I do also see various approaches out there that are perhaps more valid. But my personal approach is to look at the whole domain and apply a tailored solution to each individual company that I work with. Or if it's on the research side, you know, I work with different organizations and they've got their own concerns as well. So part of my research that I've recently published as part of my PhD is a framework to understand the holistic landscape of what when we're talking about space system security, what does that mean? What segments do we need to look at? What threats do we need to consider? And then taking from that high level approach, starting to dig down on a infrastructure specific, you know, kind of basis, so that it makes sense for the system that you're looking at. It makes sense for the threats that system is facing. And then you can apply existing controls, because as bespoke as space systems are, they're taking technologies that we do have an understanding of how to secure them, even if it's not, you know, as mature as some of our more traditional technologies. For example, you might have the Internet of Things. Like, we understand a little bit about the Internet of Things now. We understand a bit about how to secure it. We understand its unique challenges. We may not be 100% there yet because it's still new, but we've got some learnings there that we can bring across into the space sector when those particular IoT technologies are employed. And, you know, you can apply this across the realm. So for the way that I'm seeing it, I sort of mentioned a bit earlier, space takes the most challenging aspects of other critical infrastructures and brings it all into one bucket that you need to deal with. That's also where we can get our learnings from. So we're not on our own. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We just need to understand what the domain is. We need to understand what we need to secure. And then we can look at where this has been applied successfully and bring in some of that into our understanding of space security for that particular system.
So what about as we move forward? I mean, look, things are changing rapidly, even the last 5 years. You've got Elon Musk harping on about space, moving to Mars. You mentioned a few things before. But are we even really ready for space, would you say? And I know that you've obviously conducted your 4-year study around space, which included the resilience model. So where would you say, sort of as a conclusion, where we're at with everything, given your research, your quite a comprehensive understanding of the sector? I'm just curious to know.
Yeah, look, that's it's a brilliant question, and perhaps one that we've asked maybe 100 years too late, because I think right now, whether or not we're ready for space, and I do have my own personal opinions on that. I mean, personally, I might as well just say, like, personally, I don't think we are ready for space. I mean, we can't even solve basic challenges here on Earth, like how not to start a war with each other. You know, like, we're pretty, as a species, I'd say we're not mature enough to take the unified approach that is required of us to go into space. We need to operate together peacefully. We can't figure that out for some reason. So that's my personal view. But regardless of that, the reality is that we already are there. This infrastructure is there. We already rely on it critically. And so whether we're ready or not, we have to take on the challenge at this point, because life on Earth depends on it now. And moving forward is going to depend even more on space. So we have to get there. And that's why I'm really delving into this area now. And, you know, I think critical infrastructure has been my thing. And then only more recently has space become my number one focus within that, because of this challenge. Like, it really requires an all hands on deck approach from everyone across the world, because we're talking, like, you know, as soon as you're in space, you don't have national boundaries. It's a space, it's an area that we all share, you know, surrounding Earth and beyond. So we need to be able to move forwards, but who knows, maybe this space race itself and the applications coming out of it are actually the tools that we need to help unify us. You know, it's through space technologies that we have instant global communications. We're able to live stream what's happening at the front lines of a war zone. We're able to see firsthand what's happening, you know, in different countries. And you know, the internet is still relatively new, and we're only just starting to see the extent of how this is impacting humanity as a whole, and also individual psychology. And so I think the space challenge, the space race, as well as, you know, this growth in the internet, which is tightly linked to space, gives us that perspective that we are all one, we all exist on the same Earth, and potentially that itself will get us ready to be where we already are.
Wow, space race. Well, time will tell. I think it was absolutely exceptional to have you on the show today. I mean, just your knowledge, your understanding, and contextualizing a lot of the things that you've spoken about today. I think that's been exceptional. So do you have any sort of final thoughts or closing comments you'd like to leave our audience with today?
I don't want your listeners to come away feeling, you know, like they're not able to sleep tonight. I think my final message is that I'd like to put out there is really, like, all of these things that we've talked about, the main point is space is critical to us on Earth, whether or not we recognize that. It is critical. It needs to be secured. We're in the process of doing that. Potentially, we need to move a bit quicker than we are, but we're doing it. And so I think the future is bright. The present requires a lot of work, but I think we're getting there. And it is exciting to see us pull together as a human race across countries to challenge these big problems.
Well, it's having people like yourself that had an interest and you invested your time to explore more about the space and do the research. And it's people like you that are moving the needle. So I really genuinely appreciate you coming on the show today to share your thoughts, your insights, and some of your knowledge. So thanks very much, Jordan. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Carissa. Thanks for having me. It was great to be here and talking about these things.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MercSec, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit MercSec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to KBI.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.